we're going to now zoom out and take a look at some of the big races in other parts of New England, building off those couple comments. Let's go back to New Hampshire, and there is a tight governor's race and a historic contest for the second congressional district, as we just discussed. Joining us now to talk about all of that, on the phone from Manchester, is Professor Dante Scala. He teaches political science at the University of New Hampshire. Hello, Professor. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Great. I'm well. Thank you. We're going to focus on two big races here. First, the Republican governor, Chris Sununu, and his reelection bid against Democratic challenger Monally Kelly. Incumbent governors in New Hampshire, they've typically been able to secure their second terms pretty well. And Sununu has earned pretty high approval ratings, being one of the most popular governors in the country. This year, though, seems to be a little different. This latest poll, as we discussed, shows that Kelly is tightening the lead. One poll has them at 49% each. What is changing and making this race so close?
Well, you look at the fundamentals of the race, right? You look at the state of New Hampshire's economy, which is strong. You look at how do New Hampshire residents feel about their state and its direction. The answer is pretty good. You know, all of those things, plus the fact, as you mentioned, that first-term governors tend to be a lock for a second term, and it does make all of the recent polling, a bit hard to explain. I will refer back to James's comment earlier. A lot depends, I think, on whether Governor Sununu is going to suffer the effects of an anti-Trump turnout, and whether there will be a lot of voters who show up whose primary concern is not really the governor, but is to send a message to Donald Trump. And along the way, will they decide to basically vote Chris Sununu out of office because these voters are voting straight Democratic? So a key question for me is, at the top of the ticket, before they get down to the congressional races, will they, these voters, make a decision, well, you know, I'm going to separate out Governor Sununu from my feelings toward perhaps, you know, Donald Trump, perhaps the rest of the Republican Party? Governors tend to have a separate identity from their political parties because they're so well known, and that's what might well save Governor Sununu tomorrow.
Let's go ahead and talk down about that down-ticket race where I erroneously referred to it as the second congressional district. It's actually the first congressional district. New Hampshire is a purple state, and we've had a lot of conversation about a blue wave. But with incumbent Democratic Congresswoman Carol Shea Porter retiring from her seat, they have an opportunity to make history with whoever gets elected as her successor. We've got Republican Eddie Edwards. He would be the state's first African-American congressman. And we've got Democrat Chris Pappas, who would be its first openly gay congressman. Now, this seat has switched back and forth between Democrat and Republican control for the past few cycles. Do you think either party has an advantage here?
Yeah, I believe Chris Pappas will stand to be the beneficiary of Democratic enthusiasm. We saw that 2 months ago in the September primary when Democratic turnout far exceeded Republican turnout in the first congressional district. And both of them represent, you know, they're candidates without the ideological edge that characterizes our national politics today. Eddie Edwards, for example, defeated sitting New Hampshire state senator who was regarded as ideologically very conservative. Chris Pappas certainly identifies as a progressive like a lot of Democrats do, but he's never going to be mistaken for Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren type of progressive Democrat. So we've had in this race, it's been kind of noted for its, you know, quote-unquote civility, and it's been a very quiet campaign. You haven't seen the national parties playing in this district race to the extent that we have in previous cycles. So it's been, for New Hampshire overall, and in the first district, a quiet race compared to some of the House races that we're seeing around the country.
Well, it's going to be interesting to watch tomorrow the ways New Hampshire does and doesn't mirror the national wave. Professor Dante Scala, who teaches political science at the University of New Hampshire, thanks so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
You too. Now let's check in on our neighbors to the south in Rhode Island. Joining us from Providence to talk about the races in Rhode Island is Scott McKay. He's a political analyst for the Publix Radio in Rhode Island. Scott, hello.
Great to be here with you folks.
Thanks for joining us. Scott, there are six candidates in the governor's race in Rhode Island, but the main contenders are Governor Gina Raimondo and her Republican challenger, Alan Fung. Alan Fung, if elected, would be the state's first Asian American governor. Does it look like Raimondo will be able to hold on to the head office?
It does. A bunch of things are working in her direction, first of all. As is the case in Massachusetts, it's a good time to be an incumbent. Given the improving economy, one thing that Rhode Island has benefited from has been the spillover of the blossom in the Massachusetts economy. You see more people every day if you go to the train station in Providence, commuting to Boston. We have a lot of people who live in Rhode Island but work in Massachusetts, and that's really helped things here.
Okay, so that's helped. However, we know that Governor Raimondo's approval ratings have been among the worst in the nation. Why do you think that is?
You know, it's difficult to really divine. Part of it, I think, is the path-breaking figure that she is. She's the first woman governor. She likes to break things, and she's disrupted things. And she says being a change agent has hurt. Some of this goes back to when she was general treasurer, and she took on a huge project, basically, that ended up with a legislative approval of her initiative, cutting benefits in pension benefits to unionized state workers and school teachers. And that upset a big piece of the Democratic base. And some of those folks are still upset with her. Other people think she spent too much money in taxpayer subsidies trying to attract new business here. They stay here for a few years, and then they move to Boston. There's also the loss of the minor league baseball team, the beloved Pawtucket Red Sox, the Boston Red Sox top minor league team that has been in Rhode Island since the early 1970s.
Has that been a big topic in the race? Has that been an issue?
It hasn't been a huge issue because the governor has been lucky enough to deflect a lot of the blame to the House Speaker, a fellow named Nick Mattiello. In Cranston, he's from the second largest city in the state. But basically what happened was that Rhode Island couldn't match the taxpayer subsidy that Governor Baker up in Massachusetts and the Worcester City Council put together to lure this team to a new ballpark in the Canal District in Worcester.
All right. So just before you go, Professor McKay or Scott, Democrat Sheldon Whitehouse is in a Senate race with Republican challenger Robert Flanders. This is an interesting race, given that we're coming off the heels of a tense Senate confirmation. A tense Senate confirmation around the Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. Whitehouse is on the Senate Judiciary Committee, which presided over those hearings. Has that impacted that race?
Yes, that's one of the major issues that his Republican opponent, Bob Flanders, who's a well-regarded former state Supreme Court judge and a former Brown football star, Harvard Law School, very bright fellow, had a great career here. He came out of the box saying, you know, after this Kavanaugh hearing, that White House sharp questioning of Brett Kavanaugh embarrassed the state. And, of course, the flip side for White House was no. It empowered women. One thing about this race is there's a huge gender gap. Both of the major polls that were done here, one by the University of New Hampshire for our radio station, the other for a local CBS affiliate television station, showed wide, wide chasm between men and women. In this race, and I think around New England, you're seeing this, a lot of women are tilting Democratic this time. It's not a good year in a state as blue as Rhode Island, which is, we kind of laugh, it's like the color of Narragansett Bay on a sunny July afternoon when it comes to politics this year. Being a Republican in Trump world, given the president's big disapproval ratings here, has really hurt Flanders.
So, you know, you mentioned the women's vote, and I think it's going to be interesting to see which way women break in a lot of races tomorrow. Meanwhile, Scott McKay, who's a political analyst for the Publix Radio in Rhode Island, thanks so much for joining us today.
Great to be here.
All right, Anthony, we've covered a lot of ground. Mm. I just want to come back to you one more time for your final thought leading into Election Day.
Well,
tomorrow.
Just listening to Scott, listening to Dante Scala talking about all these races, I mean, the big question tomorrow is to what extent the anti-Trump backlash is going to motivate Democratic voters. You know, to come back to the New Hampshire governor's race between incumbent Republican Chris Sununu and Democratic candidate Molly Kelly. New Hampshire governors face re-election every 2 years. As Dante Scala says, they usually win re-election. So if Sununu goes down, it'll be really extraordinary. And I think it would be a reflection of that Democratic energy. And I was talking to a Democratic insider up in New Hampshire just an hour or so ago, and he predicted that tomorrow's election is going to be 2006 all over again. So that was halfway through George W. Bush's term. A lot of concern about the Gulf War. It was a Democratic wave, but in New Hampshire, it was a Democratic tidal wave. And he thinks that's going to happen tomorrow. We will see.
Well, 2006 to 2018, what waves happen? That's Anthony Brooks. He's the WBUR senior political reporter. Anthony, we're going to check in with you again on Wednesday once the votes have been counted.
Indeed. Thanks. There might be one or two things to talk about on that day.
That's right. Hey, stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.